What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms. All right, let's get it. Welcome in, everybody, to See Ball, Get Ball. We have a special guest today on See Ball, Get Ball. Brent Rollins is here, as always. I'm David Pollack. I'm your host. But we got Coach Mack Brown, and known Mack for a long time. Mack could have run for any office in the state of Texas at some point in his life. Just one of the most jovial, happy guys, like always a good storyteller, obviously coaching at Texas with all the success, winning a national championship, retiring. So many worlds, Mack. It's going to be so fun to do. I got to start with story time first. We always got to start with story time. But like, and then the transition into coaching at North Carolina and new school. So you've been a part. You're such a good speaker to be a coach to speak on the old school, the new school way, and all the changes. But give me a story like okay, USC, Texas. Nobody thought Texas could win. Obviously, one of the most famous games ever, Rose Bowl. So ridiculous. You guys win a natty. What's the pregame speech? How did Mack Brown rally the troops for that one?
Well, first, Brent and David, thanks for having me on. I love David and our time together at ESPN. And he was such a great player, and he's overcome so much in his life. And I was so impressed when you left ESPN that you were so positive and upbeat, and you took negatives and turned them into positives. That's just who you are and what you've done your whole life. And that's what life's about. You know, people sit around and stay bitter, and they're angry, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work for anybody. But and you with Lindsay, the same thing. You're so upbeat. She's so upbeat, and you're just you guys are an inspiration for all of us. So I wanted you to know that, and that's one reason when you text me, I wanted to be on, because I'm a huge fan of yours, who you are, and what you do, and what you stand for.
Thank you.
All right, you're at Texas. You 35 years, you haven't won a national championship. You beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl the year before. Nobody thought you should be there. They thought Cal should be there because they were a Pac-12 school. So you beat Michigan on the last second. Vince Young, your quarterback, who's coming back for another year, stands up and says, "We'll be back." And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, we're going to be back next year. USC is going to be one. We're going to be two, and we're going to beat USC for the national championship." So we go through the season. We beat Ohio State and Columbus, which was huge because they were probably the third best team. And that game probably decided who was going to play USC. Then you're going through the season, David, and you hadn't beaten Oklahoma in a while, so you had to beat them. Well, we killed them. And then everybody said, "Okay, we got this. We're headed to L.A., so here I am at midseason." And I mean, Sally's got a Rose Bowl T-shirt on, so I know I'm in trouble, man, when your wife is wearing a Rose Bowl T-shirt and you're at midseason. So after one game, we come in and we won the game, but they're over there watching the USC Notre Dame game with a Bush push, and they're screaming. And when Reggie pushes Matt Leinart in for the touchdown and USC wins, the whole room just explodes. I said, "What are you all doing?" They said, "Coach, we want USC. We want USC in the national championship game. We don't want anybody else." So Harvey Pinnick was a great golf teacher, and he had this famous slogan, "Take dead aim. Don't worry about the water. Don't worry about the sand. You take dead aim at that pin." So we got permission from Ben Crenshaw and Mr. Pinnick's family and Tom Kite before the season to use that as our saying for the year. Take dead aim, because we're taking dead aim on Southern Cal. After the Oklahoma game, I could see this thing was out of control. We started, we checked our video of the week of the game and that we won, and then we would check our stats versus USC stats for the rest of the year. I mean, so we were playing USC from midseason on. So then we go to the Heisman, and before we're playing we've beaten Kansas 66-14 at senior day. We've killed them. We're getting ready to go to A&M. They're 4-7. Huge rival game, but they're really struggling. So I get a call from Coach Bill Parcells, and he coached me at Florida State, and he said, "Man, you're in trouble." I said, "Coach, we're undefeated. We just killed Kansas. What's the deal, man?" And he said, "Nah, you're like that fat rat that's sitting around eating poison cheese." And that's where that came from, because he said, you're about to get beat. That's all you're talking about, USC. You're not thinking about A&M. They've had a tough season. They win this game, it's their national championship. That's all they want. So I got off the phone. I ran downstairs. I got the equipment manager to drop cheese from every locker with his quote above it. Don't be the fat rat eating the poison cheese, man. Let's go. Let's go focus on the game. So at halftime, we're down 29-24. And Reggie Bush that day killed Fresno. So that's the day Reggie won the Heisman and Vince Young lost the Heisman. And we come back, and at halftime, I said, you didn't eat all the cheese, so you're not going to die. We're going to win the game, but you damn sure got sick. So they come back, and we win the game 40-29. So then we beat Colorado 70-3 and had to hold that down because we knew we had a good team. So, David, we're in New York, and we're there for the Heisman. Reggie's there, Matt Leinart's there, and Vince is there. So it's the national championship game sitting there in front of me. Well, I could tell with Ricky Williams, they were all over us, and they were talking to us all the time. Well, they weren't talking to us much. They were all over Reggie Bush's family. So I told Vince, I don't think you won. So I don't think you're going to win, so get your speech ready, because tough thing is the guy that loses the Heisman has to have a press conference too. So I said, get yourself ready. So he said, no, Coach, I think I'm going to win. I said, no. I've been here, man. I don't think you're winning. So he didn't win. He gets on the phone. Our whole team sitting in a room in Austin, Texas, watching it on TV. And he says, game on, man. Game on. Let's make sure we beat USC. So probably Vince losing the Heisman helped us. So then we've got to figure out, we have a defensive end that says, they're no good. They had a press conference the next day, and I wasn't there, and I should have been there. And he said, USC's no good. I said, man, they've won 36 straight games. They've won two national championships. We look dumb if we say they're no good. So come on, man. Let's just face it. So we decided to be the story of Troy. We're going to get in the wooden horse. We're going to go into L.A. We're going to keep our mouths shut. We're going to brag on USC or not talk about them, and then we're going to talk after the game. So, and that's a 50-day span between your championship game and playing the national championship game. So it's a long time. So we got there, David, and practices were good, and I thought the game was good. We had Matthew McConaughey and a guy named Roy Spence started with a slogan also for the year that if you win the conference championship, you get your goal. You win the national championship, you get your dream. So we told the guys, now goals are out of the way. This is a dream. So let's go play for it. So I'm sitting there on game day. Been 35 years since Texas has won a national championship. We are playing a great team, and we're in L.A., and they're trying to get their third national championship. I'm 54 years old. I'm sitting in my room trying to figure out, what do you say? I'm flipping TV. I see Pat Riley come on and say, I think USC is going to three-peat like I did with the Lakers. And I said, I don't want to see that. So I turned that off. So I turned on this show called Jerry Springer. I've never seen Jerry Springer before. It's unbelievable. So I look up, and I mean, this is crazy. So I watched three 30-minute shows of Jerry Springer. And I said, this team's uptight. Staff's uptight. That's what I'm going to do. So I knew what I was going to hit them with. So we go to the pregame talk. I walk in, all eyes are on me, and I can tell they are so uptight. But, yeah, national championship, you're down to two. Nobody remembers who lost. You are down to two, man. It's win or you're out forever, and if you win, you're a legacy forever. So I walked in there, and I said, thank you, guys. Thank you for getting us here. Thank you from your parents, from your coaches, it's your team. You're the ones that did this. That's my friend, your friend, John Saunders, David, we love so much. We lost him. We hate that, but it was a wonderful night for him. So I said, so thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. And I said, how many of you have ever seen the show Jerry Springer? Well, all of them raised their hands, and I thought, oh, that's not good. and then I said, okay, I'm going to tell you something that's going to help you win this game. But it's also going to help you for the rest of your life. So, man, I've got them. They are locked in. And I said, if your wife or your girlfriend ever ask you to go on the Jerry Springer show, man, don't go. It's not good. And I mean, they died laughing. And I said, that's right. We're not going to come out here uptight. We're going to relax. We're going to have fun. We're going to be us. And we're good enough to win being us. You can't try to be something you're not. Being us got us here. So let's just go do what we have to do to beat a great team in USC that's not going away. And that was the something I really learned about coaching is when they're uptight, loosen them up. When you think they're a little flat and standing around, you got to put your thumb on them and wake them up. And that's just part of what happened that night.
Yeah, things I didn't have on the bingo card tonight was Mac Brown talking about Jerry Springer. I did not have that on the bingo card, Brent. Go ahead.
I was like one of the kids because I was dialed in. Okay, what's he actually going to say here? With all the things that go with that. But, Coach, obviously it's 20 years now with that team and the 20-year anniversary of that. I saw where the Texas Sports Hall of Fame is going to kind of commemorate that team. What do you remember most about the game itself? Like a moment during the game where just instantly comes to your mind about that specific game.
Yeah, Brent, there was a great coach at USC named John Robinson. And I love Coach McKay. I got to be around him a few times, but Coach Robinson was his running back coach and coached O.J. Simpson. And then he did a great job coaching at USC. So knowing that he had been in the Rose Bowl, I called and said, Coach, what's this like? What do you do? Help me about coaching and playing in the Rose Bowl. And he said, you walk out there, Coach. Not many people get to do this. And he said, it's really cool. So stand there and look into those mountains and see that sun going down and feel the history of that place. And then he said, then you got to go coach. Just forget it and go on, man. But it's just be so blessed that you're there. And then I was standing on the field with Pete Carroll before the game, and I love Pete, and we're the same age and have grown up a lot in this business together, and so happy now that he's back with the Raiders. He'll go kill it again. It's just who he is. I saw him bouncing around stretch the other day. We're standing there before the game, and he says, boy, your quarterback's really good. You got a great team, and what coaches say. And he turns around and he walks off, and Greg Davis, our offensive coordinator, comes up. And I said, Greg, oh, my gosh, they got a great-looking team, man. They have a great-looking team. And Greg Davis said something I'll never forget. He said, well, turn around. You've got a great-looking team, too. And I think there were 98 kids on that field that night that ended up playing in the NFL, which was just amazing. And then Leanne Rimes sang the national anthem, and she's from Texas, and I thought that was cool. And it was just an unbelievable game with there were about 70% of the fans were from Texas that were there, and that was cool. But it's something that state, not only just the university, that state had waited for 35 years, and it was that important to all of us.
Coach, I'm our producer, Wes. I'll keep it going for the guys because they are in a power outage. So that game, obviously legendary, and like you said, your team was etched in history. What was the reaction in Texas with the pressure lifted, and not just in any old game, but in a historic game like that? I mean, some people say it was the greatest game of all time. What sticks with you after that game that you will never forget?
There were a number of things that I'll never forget about that game. But first, the aftermath on the field was crazy. So I did find Pete Carroll, and he said, it's tough losing this game, but you've got a great team, and you deserve to be national champs. Congratulations. Then I got in to talk to our team, and somebody said there's a knock on the door, and it was Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart. And they both hugged my neck and said, Coach, great job, great team. You guys deserve to win. We missed you on the field, and we wanted to say that, which was very classy. And then you try to figure out what you say to your team. And the thing that I felt at that moment was, again, thank you. You won a national championship. You are the national champs. And that's very few people get to be the best team in the country. And you are. And then also it hit me that I saw Roger Clements in there and Lance Armstrong and Rex Lynn, the actor, and Matthew McConaughey, the actor, and I could see all these guys were really happy and really focused. So it was a moment where I thought it was a teachable moment, and I could say, you are champions, You are national champions in college football, and that'll never be taken away from you. And very few people get to share this moment. But don't let it be the best thing that happens in your life. You be a better father because of this. You be a better husband because of this. You be a better leader in your community because of this. And that'll be something that'll really help you the rest of your life. And then when we got home, we had an amazing celebration. The whole stadium was packed with people celebrating the national champion. But I also was taken back that Texas A&M fans and Houston fans and TCU fans and fans from all over that state said thank you for bringing the national championship back to the state of Texas, because football is so important in that state. And they knew that it would highlight high school football in the state. And I think that's one of the reasons that they were so excited about bringing a national championship back to the state, even if it was the University of Texas.
For everyone still tuning in, I appreciate it. This is Wes Blankenship, the producer of C-Ball Get Ball. DP and Brent's power have gone out, but I still got Coach Mack Brown on with us, and we're so appreciative of his time. Before we move on to your return to UNC, you mentioned the lift for high school football in the state of Texas, which it's hard to imagine the state of Texas ever needing a lift in high school football. But out on the road recruiting that state and the talent that you were able to bring in, what are some of the key moments, some of the highlights that stand out to you of being in that environment and how recruiting Texas high school football stood out compared to the rest of the country?
It's such a wonderful thing to be the head football coach at Texas. It is a powerful position, and people talk about the pressure. It's really pride that that state takes in their football program. So I thought the old saying, pressure's a privilege because of the pride in that state, and that's so true. So every time you would go in a high school, people would just come up and be thankful that you were there. And there were 375 athletes when I was at Texas that were signing Division I-A football scholarships on the average each year. And you got to take 20 or 22 of them. So you had to do a great job of evaluation. And then you had to develop. But you also then had 300 and something kids and families that were mad at you because you didn't take them. And they all hated the University of Texas and wanted to show you you were wrong. And they were fighting so hard to make sure that you beat them. There was a young guy at Oklahoma State once intercepted a pass on the sideline. And he turned to me and flipped it to me and said, "Wish you'd have taken me now?" I said, yeah, I messed up, bud. Sorry, I didn't take you. But there were about 350 of those guys every year that you couldn't take. So you have to do a great job of evaluating in that state. And then you still have to develop, but you've also got to do an outstanding job with public relations, because you've got to go back in those high schools. And so many of those high school coaches, you didn't take their player when A&M did, or Oklahoma did, or Houston or Texas Tech. And that made it where you needed to do a great job of evaluating, not a good job.
All right, Coach, I'm back. The power outage was real. So it's good to hear you talking about that. And I think that's you've seen it, man. It's just the state of Texas, obviously, so many people that are passionate about football and want to have a say. And I think it's a tough deal when you're doing that, and when you're picking kids, and especially when you got that big brand. I mean, it's a big brand. Speaking of, you go from Texas, you go to UNC, you get the Jordan brand, like, new challenge, obviously not an unfamiliar challenge with you from your coaching background and spending time early in your career in North Carolina. But what was it like, man, going back at an older stage in your career and going back to North Carolina?
David, I was with you with TV, and I really liked it. I enjoyed having a team again. I was probably crazy. I'd go Friday night and do a game, or Thursday night, and then get up at 4 a.m. and fly to Bristol and do ABC countdown to kickoff all day, and then do Sports Center on Sunday morning before we'd come home. But I love that. I love the game. I love the coaches. I love the kids that play the game. And that's really, really important to me. And it's what I want to continue to do, stay involved. And we got tired at Texas. 16 years is a long time at a place like Texas. Sally always said it's four presidential terms. So that's a long time to be at the University of Texas. So it was probably time for me to leave there and time for them to get somebody else new, because you get worn down. But what I learned is I was tired. I wasn't really ready to be through with coaching. So a lot of people would call and ask if you would coach in this place or this place. And Sally and I thought, we'll only go to a place where we want to live, and we would only go back to a place where we thought we could win within the rules. And North Carolina, we got married there. Our kids grew up there. They went to school at North Carolina, some of them. So it was a natural when they called us and asked us to come back. And I liked fixing things, and the program was in a mess. They'd won three games 2 years before. They'd won two games a year before. Nobody was coming to the games. It was really sad to sit there at ESPN and even watch. And I really liked Larry Fedora, but it wasn't working at the end. So we come back in, David, and what you really get into coaching for, and you coach, you've coached your kids and kids for your whole life. You get into coaching because you can change lives. And that's what's so important. People forget that, because we talk about the money, we talk about firing, we talk about how many you got to win. But really and truly, when Billy Graham said that a coach can change more lives in a year than the average person changes in a lifetime, that's pretty powerful. And Sally and I had a friend in the mountains that had a 19-year-old son. And the 19-year-old son committed suicide. And it's when we first got there. We didn't know our team very well. So we sprinted back to Chapel Hill. We called a team meeting and said, look, I don't understand suicide. I know it's not good for parents and for your friends. And I'm not a doctor, so I can't get into all the stuff. But if you're struggling, forget football. Come on, man. Let's talk about it. Let's get you some help. And we had a young guy named Jake Lawler, the story's been public. It was public with ESPN. Come upstairs and say, I was on a bridge last night. I was thinking about jumping, and you got my attention, and I need help. And here he is. I text with him probably about every 2 weeks now, and he's a great screenwriter for Disney, and he's in a great place. So you wonder why you go back to a North Carolina. That's reason enough right there, if you had a small part of changing his life. And then they hadn't been to a bowl game in a couple of years. They hadn't beaten Duke and State for a couple of years. So we beat Duke 5 out of 6. We beat State the first 2 years and then didn't do well against them. We didn't play as well. And you need to do that at that place. And before NIL, David, we were doing really well. We're recruiting at a high level. We're in top 15, top 10. But with NIL, we didn't have money. And you could tell it was just a slow bleed. I mean, you could tell it. You're having to change who you recruit. You got to recruit guys that are a 3.0 or above with your admissions. But they also needed to want to come to North Carolina academically, because you couldn't give them money. And you needed to recruit families that had some money, because it's understandable that if you're recruiting somebody and somebody offers them a lot more money than you had, then you're not going to get them, because it'd be unfair. Some of the moms said, "Coach, we'd like to come here," but I said, "I got it. I totally understand."
Understand.
And then you've got to keep your roster, and you've got guys like Omarion Hampton last year that could have gone anywhere, got offered so much more money than he had to stay there. But you got to have a guy that wants to stay. So that's kind of the predicament a lot of schools are in right now. The house settlement will help. It'll be really interesting to see what the NIL collective outside of the university's revenue share will be now. They say if it's over $600, you're going to have it vetted by a group. That'll be interesting to see. Yeah. So what's going to happen? Are they not going to let a guy make $5 million or $3 million, or what's happening now? It'll be really, really interesting to see, because we've lost a huge part of parity.
Hey, Coach, I want to know if Drake, if you're Jake Lawler kid, like, is that possible nowadays? Or, and obviously it could be possible, but like, is it possible to really shape and to cultivate and to really make a difference in this, in these kids' lives? Or maybe is it just a lot harder now with NIL?
David, I think the teams that have money will have stability with their roster, and probably the ones that come in will have a better chance to stay. But like the North Carolina's already had 67 kids change since January. So they're not going to have the experience you and I had. They're not going to come in with a freshman class and graduate with that same class. And you're not going to be in the best man in each other's weddings and be best friends. And that's something I really hate moving forward. But I don't see that happening with the current model. It's going to have to change, and it's going to have to change fast.
How do we fix it, Coach? Like, I just think that you're one of the perfect personalities because you've lived in the old world, you've lived in the new world, you've done it at such a high level and been so successful, man. Like, what is the first things that we need to implement or we need to change and listen, I think fans are going to see money for the coaches, money for the TV deals. The players deserve money, and I think we all agree. But, like, what can we do, man? How do we structure this where the kids do win? Because I think a lot of us that are in this business understand these kids aren't winning as much as we want them to. We want them to win more and at a higher level and learn and grow and make money. And so how can we do that?
David, if a young guy transfers five times, his chance of graduating are nearly nothing. I think if you transfer once, some of the courses do not transfer in. So you've got like a 63% chance to graduate. You transfer a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth time, you're not going to graduate. You're not going to have a fan base who loves you, who will help you. You're Georgia. Everybody knows the school you're loyal to. Your people love you. You're recognized. That's not going to happen with a guy that transfers four or five times. So then you're not going to be able to get a job. You don't have a degree. And I really worry about mental health when this young person is out there and he made more money in NIL to go to a school than he's going to be able to make for the rest of his life. So that's a problem for sure. So we've got to look at what's best for the players, what's best for the families, what's best for the sport. And we've got to get a group of smart people together because we made decisions without looking at the consequences. And we can say, well, that's not legal. Well, the NFL's doing it. So whether it's collective bargaining, whether it's player unions, let's get a group of smart people. Let's get Congress. Let's get commissioners. Let's get ADs. Let's get presidents. Let's get players. Let's get the Drake Mays. Let's get the top players in the country and top coaches in the country, and let's get them all in a room. And let's say, okay, number one, let's throw out all the lawsuits and all that first. What's best? What is best for everybody involved? How do we get our game back?
Isn't that the first thing that happens? Like, we want change. We want to go do something. Oh, I'm going to get sued. Lawyers. And now it's like, I'm scared. Crap. I'm out of here. So if we take one thing at a time, Mac, like transfer portal, do we have one window? Is it in January or is it May? You're the commissioner. You're the guy on this committee. What would you do?
Right now, I would move the playoffs back as far as I could. And I would have one window, and I would have it in January. And I would try to have it after the national championship game and before school starts the next two or three weeks. And then you have your team for the spring. Cal, I was told, lost five running backs after spring practice. How do you lose five running backs and replace them? You can't. So we don't need people tampering with guys all spring. We don't need guys out in spring practice that are thinking about leaving. And we don't need coaches that are coaching kids that aren't going to be there. So let's go through our season. Let's do the best we can do. Probably going to have to cut back on some games during the fall or move them back a little bit. But let's try to get the season over where we have a window where we can still transfer if you want to. Because the top kids know where they're going anyway, David. They've got agents now I don't even think they call it tampering anymore. Because usually when the kid says, I'm in the portal, but listen, I don't want any contact. Well, yeah, he knows where he's going.
I wonder why.
Yeah, or the kid says, yeah, I'm not in the portal, but I'm transferring. Well, you can't, bud. So somebody needs to
that's,
help you.
That's the transfer portal, Coach. I like that. One window, you do it in January. What about NIL? And let me tell you something, Coach, that I feel. I feel like we should have a rookie salary cap. I feel like the kids that come in, instead of incentivizing before you've done anything, Mac, like these kids are coming in and making all this money and you haven't proven anything. You haven't earned it. You can say, I did this in high school. Everybody was successful in high school. There's a million kids that are successful in high school. Like, I would love to have a salary cap minimum or maximum for those rookie kids that I think would slow some of the – because here's the thing. I got a son, Nicholas. He's a rising junior next year. He's starting to get recruited. Like, the last thing on my mind, Mac, is money. And listen, I'm in a different situation than a lot of people, but I'm like development. Where suits you the best? What are the things that you like? How do you go reach your full potential and find a spot that's really, really good for you? I think we could deter some of that by doing a rookie salary cap like that. What would you say about that?
David, I think we should have a salary cap, period.
Yep.
And we should definitely have a rookie salary cap. And coaches are calling around anyway and say, what's the going rate for a quarterback, a great quarterback? So we're kind of doing that anyway. But if the NFL can do it, then why can't college do it? And it would be better for the players. It'd be better for the families. Then you can go back and think about if North Carolina and Georgia can offer you the same amount of money, then you can go back and have some money, but also make a decision on which university is best for you. And then Nicholas can start thinking about what's best for him. We always said it's a 40-year decision. It's not four.
Yep.
Well, the last few years, it's been a one-year decision. It's been a six-month decision. And we can't have it, David, where we had a situation where if you come in for bowl practice and you're starting school in January, you could go to bowl practice with us and transfer somewhere else if you got mad at bowl practice before you went to school in January. So, I mean, that's how ridiculous it is right now. So, so we need to get to the NFL model. For the first time, I think their model is so much better than the collegiate model that we've got to get back to where, and we've got to do it with some urgency, but we've got to get back to where there's a salary cap. And coaches are making decisions on development of players. And it goes back to what is your true value. And I mean, you got to get some common sense back in this stuff because that's what we've done. We've lost our common sense because smart people have made these decisions. And by putting common sense back in it, then we can do that. And the other thing, I was president of the American Football Coaches Association. And I remember sitting there, and there were 17 board members. And we all said, we can't vote on what's best for our school, because I was at Texas. And a lot of the other schools needed different things than Texas. So I consciously had to make a decision about what's best for our game. What's best for everybody. And that's a hard decision to make for a coach or an AD or even a commissioner if it's not his league. What is best for the game? And right now, we've got to get people that are thinking about what is best for the game instead of what's best for their school, because we've got to get our game back.
And that's why I think people like you that don't have a dog in the fight anymore, people like you that have lived it, is now outside of it. Because the bottom line is, if you get a coach now that's in a school, well, you're making X. You have a dog in the fight. You get other people that are involved. You're making Y. Like, so I think that's a big deal. So we talk about transfer portal. We talk about NIL. Coach, what about contracts for players? So there is some form of a – Coach, I went down the road 45 minutes from my house. 45. And I was homesick. I was legit like, I want to go home. Like – I don't know where this is. I don't know where this is. I don't know where this is. I don't have any friends. Like, I was homesick. But then I realized, man, I started to figure out where the library was. Not so much the library, but I started to figure out where all the things were and started to make friends and started to grow up a little bit. And I think we lose some of that facing adversity and growing from it. And I know everybody wants to say money, money, money. Well, you can still get paid and you can still go maximize opportunities. But how do we hold people to maybe pushing through some of the suck, pushing through some of the new to get to where this might be the best place on the earth, This might be it, where I'm supposed to be. How do we merge that gap between school and player?
I think we can do that again with salary cap, because if I'm not going to make a lot more money to go to UCLA, if I'm in Athens, Georgia, and UCLA offers me, and I'm just throwing out names, so you UCLA fans don't get mad, but if UCLA offers a lot more money than Athens, and that seems to be what someone thinks is their worth, then that's not good. It's not fair. David, I would sit there and we'd have a recruit come in with his parents and we'd spend Friday night with him at dinner. We'd recruit him all day Saturday, showing him academics and talking about how he'd play and where he'd fit and what we'd do with him. And then on Sunday, you get in there and he'd say, "Coach, I want to come, but my parents and I have to ask you a question. It's really awkward and we hate to ask it." And I said, "Yeah." They said, "How much are we going to make?" And I really started thinking we should ask him on Friday, "How much are you going to ask for? And then let's don't worry about Saturday and Sunday and all the academics and all the other stuff if it's going to be just about money."
You can take yourself out of the equation quick.
Yeah, just ask us how much it's going to be, and it'll be a transaction. Because Sally and I always looked at the fit. You were a perfect fit at Georgia. If we had a guy in Clayton, North Carolina, and he was recruited by everybody in the country, I always thought he's better off coming here because he's going to live here. He's going to make relationships with boosters here. He's going to be a name here. And that's going to help him for the rest of his life. And right now we're losing some of that because it's too easy to have somebody throw some cash at you and flash it in your face, and then you run for the cash. And I understand if you don't have any money, even if parents need a house payment, I understand it. I got it completely. But if we can help take that issue out of it and get back to what's best for each individual, and NIL should be about a lifetime, because your name, image, and likeness, where you are now, is a lot more important than it would have been if you had gone to another school. Because everybody knows, again, you went to Georgia, you were a superstar, you built a name and a brand, so your name, image, and likeness is still working today. And that's something that young people and families need to understand. This is for a lifetime. It's a 40-year decision, not a four. And if you transfer every year, you're not going to have a place. And we all need a place to be able to settle at the end.
Well, that's where you get the stories of Jake Lawler. You know, like, that's always going to be home. And I think we all can relate to that. Well, Mac, here's the cool thing, man. Regardless, we appreciate your time. College football is still the greatest sport on the planet. It's still awesome. The fans are still great. The traditions are unmatched. The rivalries, the hatred, it's all great stuff, man. And I think we need to make sure that we say that and we love the game. We're just thinking about ways to make it better, you know, and that's, It's not we're upset about where the game is. We've seen it in a better spot. And I think finding those rules, Coach, I think we'll get there. But we appreciate your time and all you've done for the game, the way you've carried yourself with your character and all these years, man. We very much appreciate it. So talking to you today and texting with you, apparently the golf game is getting pretty solid, because did we shoot under 80 today?
No. We were at 82, so we weren't under 80. So we're getting closer. I got to get in the 70s. That's where I am now. So, but when you don't have that recruit calling you about NIL every 5 minutes while you're standing there on the course, and you can swing a little bit more and enjoy it, it's a lot different than coach's golf. Coach's golf, you're usually with a booster, you're usually answering the phone, and you're not you don't even know what your score is or care. So. Now it's such a challenging game, and I can't wait to watch the Open this weekend at Oakmont. Oh my gosh, that's going to be so much fun! But it's such a challenging game. You when you you have to reinvent yourself. You did that when you left ESPN. I'm doing that now. I'm reinventing myself. I'm not coaching. So how do I get challenges? How do I get fun stuff every day? How do I get a purpose? What do I do? What can I help? Who can I reach out to? And all those things are things that I said, you don't retire, you rewire. Yep. So I'm rewiring and figure out what's next.
Well, that's great. Well, if you're trying to keep your blood pressure down, I would not recommend golf. I mean, golly, because no. I've played every sport known to man, and I can be good at most sports. And there's nothing like getting those just straight kicks between the legs in golf. I mean, Matt, here's what I hate. I in football, man, I could bring more energy, physicality. Basketball, you can try harder. You can't even get happy in golf. Like if you get up, then you come right back down. You can't get down. It's literally a lesson in futility and just. I don't recommend that, Mac, if you're trying to keep the blood pressure down.
David, I've got a 14-year-old grandson who moved back to my tee box, and he's driving as far or further than I am. And I mean at 14. So, and I tried to keep him up. I said, don't move back. It's not good for you. It's not healthy for you. I knew it was coming. And now I'm swinging too hard because I'm trying to outdrive my 14-year-old grandson.
Well, circles of life, man. We appreciate you what you gave to the game, Coach, and the way you've always carried yourself. Thanks for joining us on C-Ball, Get Ball, Coach.
Well, thank you, David. Thanks for having me on. You're so right. College football's a great game, and we'll get these few things settled and ironed back out. But ratings were up as much as ever in the playoffs last year. So it's not going away. We just got to make sure that we take care of our wonderful game and those kids that are playing it and the parents that – of those kids and the coaches that are coaching it.
Dang right, Coach. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, David.
All right. Well, it's always good to have Mac on, man. He's full of wisdom and full of experience. I think it's good. And some of the changes that Coach is talking about, there's all kinds of things going on right now that are going to continue to shape the landscape of college football. And, you know, the Pac-12, you know, it went down to the two-pack, the Pac-2 with Washington State and Oregon State. Now, it's back to growing and expanding. And Boise State is going to be joining the Pac-12 and Colorado State and Fresno State and Gonzaga. And then with Oregon State, San Diego State, Utah State, and Washington State. So they're working on TV rights for the Pac-12. And that now, you know, brings that back into a conference. And a lot of those schools, man, that you kind of just got left behind or you kind of forget about now has a chance to kind of hook up, find its home, find a place for them. And I think that's really, really good. And I think the TV deals are always a big deal because once they get a TV deal, now you get money. And then once you get money, obviously the conference can continue to grow, continue to expand. You know, last here for today is, you know, the new NCAA policies now, and we've heard a lot about the House, you know, getting involved and what does that look like in for the ever-changing world of college football. Well, there's a couple of things. There's three parts to the new system that I think is really important. One is the cap management. Like, teams are literally going to go, okay, here's my team. I'm submitting my budget. Here's my budget. Like, this is what we paid X. This is what we paid Y. So think about like a whole sheet of your company, your corporation, wherever you're at. And you're going to have to say, like, this is where I'm sending this. This is where I'm sending that. And that way, you kind of have the system in place, because the other part of that is the NIL clearinghouse. And this is the police system. Anything outside of the staff, anything outside of the collective and the everybody working together will now be policed, will be every dollar will be accounted for. Like, boosters can't really now go, oh, I'm going to do this on the side. If they do, and it's found out about it, like, fair market value is going to be determined. And then you're going to have to speak for this. And so I think the big thing is, it's interesting because the NCAA has had these rules. They've had no ability to enforce them. Now we're kind of working around the NCAA. So think about that. That's what they're doing. You're forming these new committees like the NIL Go and the Deloitte run NIL clearinghouse. That's basically now going to have the enforcement arm. That's the third thing. They're going to be able to slap the hammer down on people that do the wrong things. The NCAA hasn't had the ability to do that. Now You're making a task that's separate. It's a new business. It's a new corporation. It's a new LLC that is going to have the opportunity to levy fund or to levy penalties. And we've seen some of that. And another interesting thing with that, like you're kind of the power brokers in the sport. So the SEC and the ACC and the Big Ten and the Big 12, like they're kind of putting this together to do it themselves. What is the NCAA doing? Like what power does the NCAA have? Is this, are we basically getting to the point now where we can say, why do we have the NCAA? Are we going to get away from the NCAA? Cause I don't see a point for them. I mean, we're continuing to stretch this and listen, there's also this, the house settlement will now have back payments, by the way. So this is curious to me. How are they going to figure out which former athletes they're going to pay? So that there's $2.8 billion in back pay that they've agreed on, that they're going to go back and pay athletes from 2016 to 2024. No, I didn't say 2004 because that would have been fantastic if they'd go all the way back to when I was at Georgia. But you have a chance to go back, and they're picking thousands of athletes. And then those athletes are going to have the opportunity to now to get money, a $2.8 million budget, or billion, excuse me, with a B. I messed that up. That's the B. To go back and pay these athletes, what does that look like? How does that look like? Who do they decide? How much do they decide? Just so many questions, I think, that are going to be interesting. But basically, schools, like with all the new rules, all the things that are going on, schools now can directly pay their athletes. Like that's where we're at. And I don't know how that sits with you. It's strange. They can pay their athletes. There's an annual salary cap, and then there's a hammer. Like there's going to be severe punishments. And we've talked about that on See Ball, Get Ball already. Like that's the thing in the end. If we're going to deter, if we want to use a new system and we want to get some semblance that will really help the players to grow, to benefit, to grow long-term, to sustain the game, to stabilize the game and stabilize the coaches. Cause here's the thing, like it's not just the players that are skipping all over the place, obviously. And you have that ability, but the coaches are burning out, man. I mean, this is a hard life. Now, I was at Ole Miss with my son, and he had a camp a couple weeks ago. And, like, talking to the coaches about their calendar and what that looks like now, it used to be a whole dead month in June where you did absolutely nothing. Well, now, because this is basically a business now, you don't have the rules. Like, you can do 7-on-7. I don't know that this even matters. Like it used to be where you had rules. You can't do this. You can only do 20-hour rule. Well, now because we're employees, like now the 7-on-7s in the summertime, like this is high intensive. When I was in school, you couldn't have a coach out there. Like your coach could not take you through drills. So that's where leadership was really important. Like you had to lead your guys. The older guys had to take you through bags and take you through 7-on-7. Quarterbacks had to get involved. And, now the coaches have that opportunity. And when they have that opportunity, obviously it's good for them. It's good to get their hands on their guys, to coach them more, to install more before you get to the point where, you know, it gets to camp and it's not counting. So ever-changing world. It's getting – but I do think the conversations are being had. I do think we're going to continue to evolve and we'll grow and maybe grow to superpowers because the SEC and the Big Ten has the power. But I think Mac are the type of guys that can help us get to that next stage. Guys that have lived it, guys that have done it. Appreciate you guys continuing to join with us, continuing to grow here on See Ball, Get Ball. It's cool to look on Apple and the podcast and to watch us, you know, in the top five. That's so crazy. It's so fun. We're appreciative to that, and we'll be back Wednesday to continue to talk about the changing landscape, continue to get guests, because college football, again, with the stuff that we talked about with Mac, still the greatest sport on the planet by far, bar none, because of the fans and the passions and all the stuff that comes with it. So thank y'all.